I can be a winning Ryder Cup captain away, so is an exceptionally big deal, and it adds a lot to my legacy.
For the best Ryder Cup build-up reaction and exclusive interviews, go to otbsports.com/golfweekly and become an official friend of the pod now.
Now, the latest chapter in the Ross O'Carroll Kelly saga is out now. It's published by Penguin. Normal Sheeple sees the King of South Dublin relocate to rural Kerry, and it's already another hit. And I'm delighted to say author Paul Howard is with us this morning. Paul, good morning to you. How are you?
Brilliant. Fantastic.
So
great to be here.
The front cover is obviously Ross in an An Gael Tox jersey, I believe, but it also it could also be a River Plate jersey. So maybe there's a series where he goes to Argentina and Buenos Aires after this.
I when I saw that jersey first, I thought of Peru in 1978. So I'm probably, 4 years older than you? It's like the old Peru jersey. We put a lot of thought into this cover. I mean, there's clearly a kind of normal people thing going on. You know, he looks like Connell with the hair. He's got the fringe. And if you look really, really closely, he's got the chain with a little kind of fungi on the end of it. But the jersey was the big thing, and it was about getting that right, because I think it's been a shock to a lot of people to see Ross on the cover of a Ross book wearing anything other than the Leinster rugby jersey or the Ireland rugby jersey. So it was about getting the artwork right. I think Alan Clark has done an amazing job with it. He draws all of the covers of the books and the illustrations inside. But it's kind of a new departure for Ross, because he's never played Gaelic football before, and he's always sort of considered Gaelic football to be for people who are, you know, too stupid to understand the laws of rugby.
I was going to say, this is definitely treading new ground. Up to this point, I suspect that you would have had a lot of GAA fans who are happy to laugh knowingly at all the rugby jokes. Now, all of a sudden, the mirror is being turned on them. And how has that experience been for those people?
Well, from what I've heard, they've laughed at it so far. I know I've had some contact from An Gael Tox, GA club, who are delighted that Ross chose them of all clubs to play for. But it sort of happened quite by accident. You know, he was bringing his daughter Honor to the Gael Tox, the Jail Tox, as she calls it. And he's utterly convinced that she won't last more than 24 hours on the Dingle Peninsula once she finds out she has no easy access to Starbucks and she doesn't have more than one bar of mobile phone coverage. But to his great surprise, she decides after 24 hours that she actually likes it and wants to stay. And to Ross's even greater surprise, he discovers the same thing about himself. And he's driving, through the Dingle Peninsula one day, and a ball hits the windscreen of his car. And he gets out and he picks it up. And it's not, as he says himself, it's not a normal shaped ball. This one is round. And some people start shouting at him to kick the ball back, and he kicks it back. And they're blown away by the length he manages to get into the kick. And it turns out that this is An Gael Tox's veteran GAA team. So they're kind of over 50-year-old footballers, and they have a grudge match coming up against Sneem. And they ask Ross, they sort of bring him in first for a training session, and they discover that, you know, all of the skills that made Ross a great rugby player, you know, the kicking and the high catching, can be equally applied to Gaelic football. And, you know, it takes them a good sort of 16 to 17 hours to explain the rules of the game to him. He discovers that he's quite good at it. And without giving the end away, he becomes fully engaged in this grudge match. He's well used to grudge matches, having played, you know, so many against Blackrock and Belvo and Clongowes. But this kind of regional grudge match, like one village or one region against another, is something he's completely new to.
Is there anything in particular, Paul, that draws Ross to Kerry specifically? Like, there's a reason that he doesn't go to, I don't know, some rural part of Donegal or Galway or Cork. Like, is this cute her kind of Healy Ray mentality down there? Is there something in the water down there specifically about Kerry that draws him down?
I don't know. I mean, he struggles with the accent. Like, Ross is, you know, once Ross kind of goes anywhere south of the Loughlinstown roundabout, absolutely everybody sounds like Peg Sayers to him. So all of the, you know, all of the language is kind of, it's like that John Millington Synge way of writing dialogue. You know, that's what Ross hears when he hears Kerry people speak. I don't know if it's, if, I think it's kind of a just an accident that Honor happened to be going to that Gaeltacht. The cool Gaeltacht, I'm told, are in Donegal and in Galway. And Honor leaves it too late to book, so she's kind of a loner. She's sent on her own down to Kerry. And so that was just quite by accident.
How do you think this character, Paul, has endured and survived for so long? I think it's 23 years now, if I'm not mistaken. Like, he probably started off as quite an unlikable character per Ross, and he's kind of come around a bit. We're all warming to him slightly. Is that part of the longevity of his character?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when I look back on the early books, I put a book of columns together this year. So it was like 23 years of Ross O'Carroll Kelly columns in a book. And when I was reading the early columns, it was kind of interesting to me because it was quite clear looking back on them that I actually didn't like Ross. For probably the first 5 years that I was writing the column, I actively disliked this stereotype, you know, this rugby jock type of character, who I'd seen quite a lot of in my own kind of childhood and youth, you know, these sort of privileged rugby jock characters. And I think over the course of 20 years of writing it, I have warmed to him. I mean, you can't write about a character for that long without developing some kind of understanding and some kind of empathy for him. But the strange thing is, somebody pointed out to me recently that in the early Ross books, Ross was the least likable character. And in the last sort of four or five books, he seems to be the only sensible character, that everybody around him has kind of lost their mind. You know, his father is the Taoiseach now, and, you know, he's establishing links with Vladimir Putin and trying to take Ireland out of the EU. His wife, Surika, is the Minister for Climate Action, and she's trying to ban cows and sheep in Ireland. She's trying to kind of wipe out the breeds because of the, you know, the harmful gases. So everybody's kind of lost their moral compass a little bit. And Ross, it has kind of just become an observer of this madness that's going on around him. And I think that's part of the reason people have kind of started to like him. You know, I think he's kind of, he is, in a lot of ways, he's sort of become the straight man watching other people's madness.
On a personal level, have you found it more difficult to be creative over the last few years when you haven't been trying to scratch the itch of the gaping hole of Liverpool's failure in your life? All of a sudden, that bit of your life has been fulfilled. And surely that makes life far more difficult for you as a creator.
Yeah. Well, look, last year was the most productive year of my career. And that was the year when I kind of rediscovered suffering, you know, as a Liverpool fan, you know, watching what kind of happened to Liverpool between the start of January and the end of the season. And it's probably not a coincidence that, you know, I did more work then. I was more productive then in those months. But you know, having followed Liverpool as a kid, and, you know, it's no coincidence that I chose Liverpool because I was 6 years old when they won the first European Cup in 1977. So I was allowed to stay up late to watch Liverpool. So they were my team as a child and into my teenage years. And a lot of Man United fans will know how this feels. You don't ever see a day when your team is not going to be successful, when you're going to know what it just feels like to, you know, just sort of shrug and say, that's what it means to be a Liverpool fan, you know. And, you know, having suffered through like the Roy Hodgson years, for instance, you know, I sort of came to a point where I just thought, I will never see a successful Liverpool team again in my lifetime. So, you know, the Jurgen Klopp years have just been, you know, just an unexpected twist in my life.
Is there a weird sense of how tenuous it is now, that it could easily revert back to a Roy Hodgson style era, that it's all completely bound up, it seems, essentially in Klopp's genius?
Yeah, but I don't think Klopp is going anywhere. I've heard a lot of people say, oh, well, he's going to take the Bayern Munich job and then he's going to take the Germany job. And, I think he's quite happy there. I don't see that ending. I see a lot of really exciting things happening at Liverpool. Like, you know, I know Liverpool fans, they're quite excitable and quite neurotic. And, you know, having suffered through 30 years, I think that's kind of understandable. But, you know, when Liverpool don't sign players, it's suddenly seen as, you know, this is the end of a great era for Liverpool. But I kind of see progress in the really boring stuff, like that fans don't want to know about, like, you know, signing players up on new deals. You know, they're not sexy news stories that grab headlines, like signing Ronaldo or Lukaku or Jack Grealish. But this is Liverpool for the next 5 years now, you know, giving new deals to, you know, Alisson, Fabinho, Henderson, Andy Robertson, Trent Alexander-Arnold. Like it's paperwork stuff, so fans don't get excited about it, but it's a sign that Liverpool are no longer a selling club. And that's what's sort of killed Liverpool over the last, especially kind of the 10 years before Klopp came in. You know, you remember, you know, Torres, Alonso, Mascherano, Coutinho, these players who should have been building blocks for Liverpool, you know, the players you build a great team around. But as soon as a good offer came in for them, they were gone. And I kind of think that's not happening anymore. You know, there's some players are signing up to longer deals. There's lots of reasons for that. You know, the financial collapse of Spanish football, especially Barcelona and Real Madrid not being in a position to sign players. So players aren't being, you know, they're not being enticed to go abroad anymore. But I think that stuff is really, really exciting. But it's kind of hard because, you know, fan websites don't talk a lot about players getting new contracts.
Well, one of the things, I suppose, Paul, that like I've noticed you even talking on Twitter about it as well, is a couple of things, like for example, the yellow card of a player gets when he takes off his shirt after scoring, or even, and I think the way you phrased it was this fetishization of numbers, like the XG, the expected goals, in amongst fans and fan forums at the moment. Like, is modern football enjoyable for you, or does all this kind of nonsense maybe make it a little less enjoyable than it used to be?
Yeah, I mean, I can switch that stuff off. I mean, I mock the XG thing all the time. I just know that a lot of my friends who were into the XG thing aren't really into football. They're kind of numbers people more than football fans. Even things like assists really annoy me because, you know, like the most decisive move in any particular goal, it might not be involve the second last player to touch the ball. It could be an extraordinary through pass. I was looking at a goal last night. I think it was Dirk Kuyt's first goal for Liverpool. And
as you do.
As you do. I was looking back on the, you know, the glory days, and Xabi Alonso plays this extraordinary pass that's almost like a golf putt right to the feet of Steve Finnan, who crosses the ball for Kuyt to score from, you know, 6 yards out. So Steve Finnan, if assists had been a thing at the time, which, you know, mercifully they weren't, Steve Finnan would have got the assist. But the genius is in Xabi Alonso's pass. And this pass was just extraordinary. It's worth having a look at it, you know. It curls. Like, it is like a golf putt. He curled this pass on the ground. That's the reason Liverpool scored the goal. So that just, things like that just make a nonsense of the whole notion of assists. I think of Maradona's great goal against England in 1986, the second one. I mean, who got the assist for that? Like, sometimes there isn't an assist, and sometimes the assist is four passes back, the real assist. I think this stuff has been brought in to facilitate gambling and to facilitate fantasy football. And I think there, you know, people who are into those two things get utterly obsessed with those things. I saw Liverpool fans on a forum last weekend, and quite a few of them in my Twitter feed talking about how many shots at goal Liverpool had against AC Milan inside the box as opposed to outside the box. Like, you know, like this is somehow relevant. And, you know, having gone to football all my life, like I never remember leaving a match excited by how many shots at goal we had inside or outside the box. Like those things are just utterly meaningless to me. It's about the results, you know, it's about the score.
Can I just bring you back to just one second to something you said a moment ago, Paul, about last year being the most productive of your career. Like it strikes me, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that this is the Norma Sheeple is the third of four books I think you're involved in coming out this year. Like the pandemic for a lot of people, I suppose, gave us an opportunity to kind of sit back and reflect and do things we didn't have time to do. So clearly that time period for you has been remarkably productive.
Yeah, I mean, I'm here in Avoca in Wicklow, and we, you know, for the start of the pandemic, we couldn't go more than, what was it, 2 kilometres from the house, and there's not a lot to do, you know, within 2 kilometres of my house here. So I was stuck here, you know, socially, like couldn't see anyone. So I had quite a few deadlines at the time. So it was, you know, in a sort of perverse way, it was a godsend to me because I didn't have to live a life outside of work. So, you know, I get up early to work. So I was kind of, you know, I was up at, you know, 5 o'clock every morning and work until 5 o'clock every evening. So I did sort of 12 hour days for a year. But I had a huge amount of work to do last year. I was working with Gordon Darcy on his the children's series we've been doing together, and we've just finished the third one, which is out next month, and which is about what Gordon goes and plays for the Lions. But it was great to have that work because, you know, I think there's only so much time of every day I could spend on the internet looking up, you know, old Dirk Kuyt goals for Liverpool.
So what's next?
I'm actually sitting down today. I have a piece of paper in front of me and it just says Ross Book 22 storylines. And so I'm starting to plot next year's book. I'm starting to plot the follow-up to Normal Sheeple. And so it's a year out, but it's just... For me, it's just process, you know, like this is what I do in September every year. I'll spend a week working at the storylines. I'll send them to Rachel Pierce, my editor, and we'll have a discussion over several weeks over, you know, what should go into the next book. And then I'll come up with a beat by beat plot. It sounds quite boring, but that's what I do for every book. And then Lions Roar, the next book in the Gordon's Game series, is out on the 14th of October, I think. So that's exciting as well.
Next year, obviously, is the 20th anniversary of Saipan. Will you dust down Gaffers and give us a reanimated version, a revisited version?
I don't know. There's just been so much about Saipan over the years. You know, at the 5th anniversary, the 10th anniversary, the 20th anniversary. Is coming up, you know. I know we had the 20th anniversary recently of Ireland against Holland at Lansdowne Road, the 1-0 win that really kind of took that team to the World Cup in 2002. For me, that's much more interesting. For me, that's much more of a sort of unexplored story. I would love to sit down with Louis van Gaal and watch that match and just talk to him about it and talk to him about his decisions. Why he put 4 strikers on at the end and resorted to the long ball. I think that stuff is fascinating. I kind of think the Saipan thing is burned out a little bit. I don't think there's even any nostalgia value in it at the moment. After all these years,
we're dead. We're dead inside. Essentially, is the problem.
Well, I think we
from Saipan.
I think we cared too much at the time that it's very difficult to care enough 20 years later.
Thankfully, we've moved on, I hope. Paul, good stuff. Congratulations on the book and thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on. Thank you.
No worries. It's called Normal Sheeple and it is available in all good bookshops and online now. And it's the continuing story of Ross O'Carroll Kelly down in Angoyle Talked.